This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Welcome to Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and our first article comes from front page of the Military Times, dated February 19, 2025. Victims' family files $250 million claims against Army FAA over DC crash. The wife of a Connecticut man who died in last month's collision between a passenger jet and a military helicopter near Washington, D.C.'s Ronald Reagan National Airport has filed what are believed to be the first legal claims over the crash that killed 67 people. The claims by Rachel Crafton were filed Tuesday against the Federal Aviation Administration and the U.S. Army, with each seeking $250 million for alleged wrongdoing that led to the collision and death of Casey Crafton, 40, of Salem, Connecticut, according to her Chicago-based lawyer, Robert Clifford. The filings were made under the Federal Tort Claims Act and are a required precursor to a lawsuit. If the FAA and Army either reject or do not act on the claims within 6 months, a civil wrongful death lawsuit can be filed in federal court. The families are filing this to achieve their goal of taking the first steps towards what the whole world knows will be an eventual litigation against the FAA for its air traffic control and the U.S. Army relative to the operations of the helicopter, Clifford said in an interview Wednesday. Clifford, who said he represents other crash victims' families, said the claims were based on public comments federal officials have made about the crash, including alleged understaffing at the air traffic control tower, the helicopter pilot flying above the 200-foot limit near the airport, and communication lapses between air traffic control and the aircraft. Clifford also sent letters to American Airlines, Sikorsky Aircraft, and Collins Aerospace demanding that they preserve any evidence relating to the crash. In a statement, the Army declined to comment on the filing Wednesday. Out of respect for the deceased, their families, and the ongoing investigation, it is inappropriate for the Army to comment on any speculation regarding claims or potential litigation, Army spokesperson Major Montrell Russell said. Our primary focus is on supporting the families and ensuring the safety of our soldiers and the public. The FAA said Wednesday that it does not comment on potential litigation. On January 29th, American Airlines Flight 5342 was coming in from Wichita, Kansas, carrying 60 passengers and 4 crew members. As it approached Reagan National to land on a clear Wednesday night, at the same time an Army Black Hawk made by Sikorsky was on a training exercise with 3 soldiers aboard. The 2 aircraft collided and plunged into the Potomac River, killing everyone aboard the jet and the helicopter. It was the deadliest plane crash in the U.S. since 2001. When a jet slammed into a New York City neighborhood just after takeoff, killing all 260 people on board and 5 more on the ground. Investigators have said the helicopter may have had inaccurate altitude readings in the moments before the crash, and the crew may not have heard key instructions from air traffic controllers. The collision likely occurred at an altitude just under 300 feet as the plane descended towards the helicopter, which was well above its 200-foot limit for that location. Clifford also cited an FAA report that said the air traffic control staffing was not normal at the time of the crash. One air traffic controller was responsible for both coordinating helicopter traffic and arriving and departing planes, when those duties are often divided between 2 controllers, the report said. But the airport typically combines those roles at night when traffic begins to slow. Casey Crafton was a technical support manager for an aviation consulting firm who was returning from a business trip to Wichita when he died. He and Rachel Crafton had 3 young sons, ages 7, 10, and 12, and he coached their youth soccer and baseball teams. They will be grieving him for the rest of their lives. That will never be the same, Clifford said. This crash involves complex matters. The family deserves answers as to what happened to their loved ones. In our next article, New York deploys National Guard to state prisons amid labor strike. New York Governor Kathy Hochul has deployed National Guard troops to the secure state-run prisons amid a wildcat strike by correction workers. Picketing and striking by correction officers took place at around 30 state prisons as of Wednesday morning, union officials said. Hochul says National Guard troops are being deployed Wednesday, but she did not immediately specify where. They've already been deployed and are ready to stabilize the situation, Hochul said of the National Guard soldiers in a video addressed released Wednesday. I am directing everyone involved in those unlawful strikes to stop these actions immediately. Legal action has already commenced to ensure compliance. National Guard soldiers and Humvees entered the grounds of Attica Correctional Facility, Spectrum News reported. The extent of the governor's legal action wasn't specified, but Hochul on Tuesday cited a state law that can lead to fines and other punishment for state workers who strike illegally. A spokesperson for Hochul did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the deployments, the roles the soldiers would perform, or the extent of the strikes. The State Prison Guards Union had conceded that the strikes is illegal and says they did not authorize it. Union representatives met with the governor's team for the second straight day. Negotiations with the state have continued throughout today between NYSCOPBA and the governor's office towards a resolution. New York State Correctional Officers and Police Benevolent Association spokesperson James Miller said Wednesday in a statement, union officials have said that corrections officers are protesting for better pay, heightened searches of prisoners, prison visitors, and a reversal of recent prison reforms that limit solitary confinement. The strike also follows the killing of inmate David Brooks. Video shows him being beaten by correctional officers while he was handcuffed and at the Marcy Correctional Facility. The governor eventually ordered the firing of prison staffers involved in a death, which was ruled a homicide in early February. A special prosecutor is expected to announce an update in a criminal case in Brooks' death Thursday. And in our next article, salvage effort gets underway in San Diego following Growler jet crash. Wreckage recovery operations entered a fourth day Wednesday, and the Navy is calling on the public to report debris as Navy Explosive Ordnance Disposal and diving teams trawl San Diego Bay for what remains of an EA-18 Growler that went down in the water February 12th. The first pieces of the plane were pulled up on February 16th, the first day of salvage ops, according to officials with the U.S. Third Fleet, which was purview over naval assets and personnel in the Eastern Pacifics. Officials did not immediately respond to questions about how many pieces of wreckage have been recovered to date or how many personnel were involved with the effort, but the command estimates salvage and recovery operations will take some 2 weeks to complete. The Growler, assigned to Electronic Air Attack Squadron 135 out of Naval Air Station Whidbey Island, Washington, crashed around 10:15 local time near San Diego's Shelter Island while attempting a landing. The jet's two air crew members were able to eject and were first picked up by the Premier Sport Fishing Vessel before being taken to a local hospital, according to Navy officials. They were subsequently treated in stable condition and temporarily kept under 24-hour surveillance as a precaution. Immediately following the crash, harbor security boats were moved into the area and a boom in place to contain fuel and debris. The start of salvage and recovery operations was delayed several days due to a rainy, blustery winter storm that moved through the San Diego area. Prior to the start of the recovery, the U.S. Coast Guard established a safety zone between Naval Base Point Luma and Shelter Island, limiting entry to the area only to personnel and vessels specifically authorized by Port San Diego. Civilian vessels were not permitted to transit in and out of the Shelter Island Basin through the southwestern portion of the channel from February 15th until the conclusion of salvage operations, Navy officials said. Navy personnel involved in the covering wreckage include explosive ordnance disposal technicians and divers with mobile diving and salvage compage 3-8 under the Coronado Base Explosive Ordnance Disposal Mobile Unit 3 and equipment operators with Amphibious Construction Battalion 1, also set out of Coronado. On February 14th, the salvage team anchored a barge and a YD-254 100-ton floating crane to prepare for the recovery effort. While efforts have not yet confirmed what portions of the jet have already been recovered, video from local news station CBS 8 suggests the crew members' ejection seats may have been the first objects pulled from the water. San Diego Bay reaches depths of 21 feet in places. The local San Diego Union Tribune newspaper reported that the Growler, an F-A-18 Hornet variant used by the Navy for electronic warfare, thanks to the ALQ-99 underwing jamming pods it carries, had been executing a go-around maneuver indicating an aborted landing prior to crashing in the bay. This is the second crash of a Growler within the last 6 months. On October 15, 2024, one of the aircraft from Electronic Attack Squadron 130, also out of Whidbey Island, crashed east of Mount Rainier during a training flight, resulting in the deaths of both aviators. The incident remains under investigation. It's also the second time in the last year that a Navy aircraft has gone down in San Diego Bay, necessitating a salvage and recovery effort. On January 11, 2024, an MH-60R Seahawk helicopter went down in the bay and was recovered 3 days later by Explosive Ordnance Disposal Mobile Unit 3. All six crew members were safely recovered from the aircraft. That crash also remains under investigation. A Navy command investigation into the latest Growler crash is already underway, Navy officials said. And in our next article, White House eyes 8% cut to defense budget to boost Trump priorities. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth ordered senior military officials to develop a budget plan that would slash defense spending by 8%, a dramatic cut which could reshape military end strength and readiness for decades. In a memo first obtained by the Washington Post, Hegseth ordered the proposed cuts to be compiled by February 24th. 17 categories would be exempt from the budget reductions, including military operations at the southern U.S. border, nuclear weapons and missile defense programs, and acquisitions of certain drones and munitions. The idea of steep defense cuts, originally reported by Bloomberg last week, is certain to draw opposition from lawmakers on Capitol Hill, where Republicans in recent weeks have been discussing major increases in defense spending in the coming years, not significant cuts. But Hegseth's budget plans appear to follow broader instructions from President Donald Trump to reduce government spending, including the dismissal of thousands of federal workers in the last few weeks. Total defense spending reached nearly $850 billion in fiscal year 2024. The fiscal 2025 Defense Department budget has not yet been finalized, despite the new fiscal year starting last October. The Washington Post reported the potential 8% cut as an annual reduction for 5 years, but in a memo sent out Wednesday evening, Acting Defense Secretary of Defense Robert Salas said the goal was to find offsets in the fiscal 2026 budget plan, with a goal of finding at least $50 billion to transfer to programs aligned with President Trump's priorities. An 8% annual cut for the next 5 years would mean almost $300 billion less in military spending through fiscal 2030 compared to a stable budget figure. But most years, lawmakers approve increases in military spending at least equal to inflation, and often even higher than that. Through our budgets, the Department of Defense will once again resource warfighting and cease unnecessary spending that set our military back under the previous administration, including through so-called climate change and other woke programs, as well as excessive bureaucracy, Salas wrote. The time for preparation is over. We must act swiftly to deter current and impending threats and make the best use of taxpayer dollars in doing so. Defense Department officials did not provide a public copy of Hegseth's memo to agency heads. Earlier this year, Trump publicly suggested that all NATO countries spend at least 5% of their gross domestic product on a defense and figure that would mandate a nearly $1 trillion military budget for the United States. Approving any defense cuts will fall to the Republican-led Congress, which began hearings on the fiscal 2026 military budget in the last few days. That process is expected to take most of the year. Before that, lawmakers will need to reach agreement on a short-term or long-term budget extension for fiscal 2025 by the middle of March, trigger a partial government shutdown. Last month, Senate Armed Services Committee Chairman Roger Wicker, Republican of Mississippi, told Breaking Defense he hoped to boost defense spending by as much as $200 billion in coming years to deal with the growing threats from China, Iran, or other adversaries. And in our next article, VA leadership nominee grilled over recent department layoffs. Veterans Affairs Deputy Secretary nominee Paul Lawrence faced harsh questioning from Democrats during his confirmation hearing Wednesday, not for his plans for future reforms within the department, but instead for changes being put in place before he gets there. Lawmakers lashed out at Lawrence, in line to be the second highest ranking officials at VA, for his lack of insight and outrage over the recent dismissal of more than 1,000 department workers as part of government-wide efforts to trim the federal workforce. VA officials have insisted that the moves won't hurt veterans' benefits or medical care options, but Democratic lawmakers on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee called the firings arbitrary and reckless, and questioned whether White House officials considered the long-term impact of these moves. They're just making stuff up, telling the public things that then later turn out not to be true, said Senator Maggie Hassan, Democrat of New Hampshire. They're not thinking through how their actions will actually affect veterans, and I'm concerned that this reckless pattern of decision-making will continue. Lawrence, who served as VA's Undersecretary for Benefits during President Donald Trump's first term in office, deflected most of these complaints, saying that he has not been involved in the personal decisions ahead of his likely confirmation. He promised to work closely with lawmakers to clarify how future personnel moves will and will not affect department operations, and expressed confidence that VA leaders are making moves to improve efficiency at the agency. Lawrence's job would effectively make him chief operating officer for the department, handling a variety of issues, including the ongoing electronic health records overhaul. In December, VA officials said they hope to restart that embattled effort in mid-2026. Lawrence said he hopes to move quicker on the issue. "We can't spend months again studying what's going on and figuring it out," he said. "Everything's on the table. The goal is to come up with a plan that can be implemented and to implement that plan." He also promised to continue implementation of the PACT Act, a 2022 law dramatically expanding veterans' benefits eligibility for military toxic exposure injuries, and work for ways to offer more medical care options to veterans. And he dismissed accusations that administration officials are working to massively shift veterans' funding from federal medical centers to private sector clinics. "We are not going to privatize VA," he said. "We would push back on any efforts to do that." Lawrence said he would ensure that outside officials, including members of the Department of Government Efficiency, do not access veterans' benefits or health care information. "Access to veterans' benefits and health information is strictly guarded," he said. "There is a restrictive process to do that." Lawrence is expected to be easily approved by the Republican-controlled Senate in coming weeks. If that happens, the vote will put confirmed officials in the department's top two leadership posts as the White House tries to put in place further reform efforts at VA. And in our next article, TRICARE snafus cause medical shortfalls for military families. An Army wife was notified last week that her son shouldn't be able to go to his appointment with the pediatric pulmonologist he'd been seeing for the last 2 years. The medical practice could no longer accept his TRICARE insurance under the Defense Department's new TRICARE contract with TriWest Healthcare Alliance. Her elementary-aged son has a heart condition and asthma and is prone to pneumonia. He is required to see the pulmonologist every 6 months and can't get a refill for his critical medication until he sees that doctor. "This is one of the extremely important doctors he needs," she said, crying during a telephone interview February 13th, the day she learned her son wouldn't be able to see the provider. "He can't go without this medication." The wife, who asked to remain anonymous out of fear of retaliation against her active duty husband, thought Defense Health Agency officials had provided a solution when they announced beneficiaries in TRICARE West would be able to see the specialist if they obtained referrals from their primary care doctors and a waiver letter provided by TRICARE officials. The temporary policy change made in late January said beneficiaries would not have to wait for TRICARE West to approve the referral. But the medical group contacted her on February 13th to say they couldn't see her son for his February 21st appointment without an authorization number from TRICARE. They refused the waiver. She called TriWest again February 18th, and after being on the phone from 8 a.m. until 1:30 p.m., including being on hold for several hours, She was able to get a referral authorized for her son because of his critical need. The Army wife said the representative took extraordinary measures to get the referral through. It would take at least 4 months to get another appointment, she said. Her family has endured a series of problems since the new contract started, with TriWest in January. They are among an untold number of military families and healthcare providers who have experienced issues. TRICARE Healthcare Alliance took over TRICARE West Region contract on January 1st in December 2022. Defense officials announced the awarding of the two new TRICARE contracts worth a potential combined $136 billion over 8 one-year option periods. Humana Military's contract is worth a potential $70.8 billion, while TriWest's is worth a potential $65.1 billion. After protest hurdles were cleared, the work on transitioning to the new contracts started in January 2024. Last year, Defense Health Agency officials assured military families there would be no interruptions to their health care with the new contracts, and they promised the contracts would bring some improvements to their health care. We are committed to keeping all of our military families informed about your health plan, your choices, ensuring a seamless transition to new contractors, DHA Director Army Lieutenant General Talita Crossland said in a May 2024 press release. But the transition to TRICARE to TriWest from the Health Net Federal Services has been anything but seamless. According to multiple military families and healthcare providers who have contacted the Military Times, these problems have affected patients' ability to get needed care, including a terminal cancer patient whose referrals were lost somewhere in the system. Since January 1st, beneficiaries and providers alike have had problems with TriWest's online portal, and many have waited hours on hold with the TriWest call center for multiple days. Families dropped from coverage. On January 24th, when the Army wife took her children to their appointment at their military clinic near Fort Cavazos, Texas, she found out they'd been kicked out of the TriCare Prime as of January 1st. While she is happy with the care they continue to receive at the military clinic, she and her sons need to see a variety of specialists. They advise us at the appointment that we are no longer TriCare Prime and we are in direct care, which is almost like having not having insurance at all, she said. Direct care is run on a space available basis at military clinics. So far, the family has been able to get their primary care at the clinic. Prior to the doctor's visits on January 24th, they hadn't been notified of the loss of coverage. In November, we were told everyone would be automatically ported over from TRICARE East to TRICARE West, she said. For us and many others, that wasn't the case. Texas is one of the six states that were transferred from coverage under the TRICARE East region to the TRICARE West region under the new contracts. It took 3 days and multiple phone calls with TRICARE West and TRICARE for the family to get back into TRICARE Prime, the Army wife said. Getting kicked out of TRICARE was only the beginning of the Army's family's problems, which have reached a crisis level. Though she received authorization for her son to see his specialist, she also needs surgery for a new condition, but is unable to find a doctor who will accept her insurance because of the TriWest problems, the wife said. The Defense Health Agency announced several steps to help military families deal with the problems, including a waiver that is intended to allow families to see specialists without waiting for TriWest to approve a referral. But, as the Army wife and others have found, an unknown number of specialists won't accept the waiver for even for existing patients because of the difficulties the providers are having with TriWest. In addition to widespread problems with TriWest's web portal, a call center wait times, other problems reported to Military Times include receiving incorrect information from TriWest, TriWest taking months to approve contracts for TRICARE providers, and providers not being reimbursed for the care they receive provided to TRICARE beneficiaries. Because the providers are having these difficulties, some of them are not taking new TRICARE patients and dropping the ones they did have. We've been really concerned about all the issues that both providers and beneficiaries are encountering in the East and West regions, said Eileen Huck, Acting Director of Government Relations for the National Military Family Association. We're concerned about the impact the issues are having on families' access to care, and we're concerned about the impact on the network if providers are not receiving timely reimbursement. Many providers in the network are small businesses, Huck noted, including some run by veterans and military spouses. It's not realistic to expect they can go weeks without receiving reimbursement, Huck said. We've heard from multiple providers who are either contemplating leaving the TRICARE network or having to close their doors. Problems in the East and West. In statements provided to Military Times, Defense Health Agency's officials and TriWest officials said they are aware of the issues. DHA is very concerned about the issues that have been reported in both the East and West regions regarding provider reimbursements, patient wait times with the call centers, and web portal challenges, among others. We understand these challenges and are working hand in hand with both TriWest in the West and Humana in the East to resolve these issues, officials stated. In the East region, the problems appear to center around providers' lack of payment since January 1st. Some providers have told Military Times they are in danger of having to stop seeing TRICARE patients or even shutter their businesses. Humana Military remains the TRICARE East contractor, but the company has a new claims processor. DHA is aware of the issues Humana has had with their claims processor. They have assured us this is being fixed, and we are holding them to the terms of their contract with us, officials said in their statement to Military Times. Humana officials told Military Times a small percentage of providers' records in the claims administration system contain outdated or incorrect data, despite loading all providers' current data into the system in preparation for the new contract. Claims have started flowing through the processing systems and payments have begun, officials said. Humana have also made the decision to send advance payments to the most vulnerable providers who have submitted claims, they added. Humana Military has identified the root cause of this issue and is working to resolve it and prevent it from reoccurring, they said February 7th. At this time, we anticipate those remaining issues will be fixed in the next couple of weeks. Humana officials said providers can submit claims through a clearinghouse, mail, email, or fax if they can't submit them through the provider portal at humana.military.com. As for the plethora of problems in the West region, DHA officials told Military Times they are monitoring TriWest's performance daily and are taking appropriate steps and contract actions to facilitate resolution of all performance issues in the West region. In a February 5th response to concerns and questions raised by Representative Marilyn Strickland, Democrat of Washington, DHA officials said they have issued a corrective action request for the West region's referral and authorization issues are considering additional requests. We will continue to leverage all available avenues of redress before, shortly before in the U.S. military. Their sister is now being chased by the Taliban, other terrorist organizations, and criminals who kidnap those with U.S. ties to ransom money, Mojo told Military Times. Everyone in her neighborhood is aware of her family's involvement with the U.S. government, which has endangered her life. Well, I'm afraid we've ran out of time for now. I'd like to thank you for joining us for listening to Military Times. My name is Mark Love, and I hope that you'll join us next time.